While we're at work, school, and running errands, the furry residents of our home are left to their own devices. And that can be, well, a little unnerving. Make sure you know exactly who deserves a timeout or an extra snack when you get home by adding Ring's Indoor Cam 2nd Gen to your home. This is also a great way to make sure your pets are safe when you're away. Pair your Ring Indoor Cam with the Ring mobile app and check in on your four-legged friends anywhere, anytime. Ring devices are available at Incredible Connection, Takealot, Leroy Merlin, and other major retail stores. Because with Ring, you're always home. Since 2019, True Crime South Africa has been telling the stories of the victims of violent crime in South Africa. The podcast is independent. That means no big or even little corporates fund it. And that's just the way I like it. And it's the only independent podcast in South Africa that consistently charts in the top 10. Keeping a podcast like this going is time-consuming, and for the most part, it remains a one-woman process. It's me. I'm the one woman. You, yes you, are the reason this podcast continues to flourish and help bring in tips on missing person and cold cases. If you'd like to help keep the show running, please consider supporting our sponsors, signing up to Patreon or PayPal, follow the show on the socials, as the kids say, and share it with your fellow partners in crime. You can find our social links and learn more about our sponsors at truecrimesouthafrica.com/donate. Shout out to this week's Patreon and PayPal superstars. A huge thank you goes out to Corin Malharba, Shaman Deeplaw, and Adam Majok for your support on Patreon. Thank you so much, everyone. Patreon supporters get one additional exclusive episode a month, a shout-out on the pod, and other exclusive contents, including Q&As with me as and when it's available. It's a minimum of $1 a month. I think you should do it. Please. And thank you. Kia ba. These special episodes are a new feature to the podcast. The first one I did on the Sex Offenders Register was really well received, and I got a lot of feedback, which I'm really grateful for, and I'll use that feedback to develop future episodes around the topic. While I'm on the topic of the Sex Offenders Register, be sure to catch the new series that's dropped on Mnet called School Ties. It's an exploration into some of the allegations of sexual grooming and abuse at a few prestigious South African boys' schools. It really is an incredibly important series and a highly recommended watch. In today's special, I'm going to be discussing another really frequently used term, which is human trafficking. Since 6-year-old Jocelyn Smith went missing from Saldanha in the Western Cape 3 months ago, the term has been bandied about quite a lot. And although I don't think it's helpful for me to cover Jocelyn's case right now, I do think it's important for us to all understand what human trafficking actually is, how it happens, and who is generally responsible. And of course, what happens to the victims. This is likely going to be a multi-parter special because there's going to be a lot to explore in all the different manners of human trafficking. My sources include the Samlit report, various UN documents and reports, and an article from the digital magazine Savamus. So let's get into your True Crime South Africa special, Human Trafficking, Part 1.
The following episode may contain sensitive material, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, or graphic descriptions of injuries to victims. If you feel you may be triggered by such material, please consider this before accessing our content. To access trauma counseling or services, please see the helpline information on our show notes.
According to the South African Anti-Money Laundering Integrated Task Force, or SAMLIT, human trafficking can be defined as follows. The process whereby people are recruited within their communities and countries of origin and are transported to destinations where they are exploited for the purposes of forced labor, prostitution, domestic servitude, among other forms of exploitation. And I think that definition is very important, because we often think about human trafficking as children being abducted and smuggled out of the country to pedophilic rings overseas. I think that's the definition most people will give you if you ask what human trafficking is. But it's far more than that. And really, the truth is that most victims of human trafficking are not abducted in the way we picture that act. They aren't snatched off the street, bundled into a car, and driven to a seaport or an airport. The vast majority are actually convinced to go with their smugglers, under coercive and false conditions, of course, because if they knew what they were headed for, they would never agree. But most victims willingly participate up until a point. And that's important to understand as well, because again, the vast majority of perpetrators of these crimes are not complete strangers to the victims either. There's often a grooming process, just like with sexual assault and rape, where the perpetrator gains the victim's trust before executing the act of trafficking. On a global level, the United Nations Protocol on Human Trafficking, called the Palermo Protocol, is the main legal instrument used to fight the crime internationally. It has a more expansive definition than SAMLIT and acknowledges the coercion that's involved in trafficking. Quote, "Trafficking in persons shall mean the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, or receipt of persons by means of threat or use of force or other forms of coercion, of abduction, fraud, of deception, of the abuse of power or of a position of vulnerability, or of the giving or receiving of payments or benefits to achieve the consent of a person having control over another person for the purposes of exploitation. Exploitation shall include, at a minimum, the exploitation of the prostitution of others or forms of sexual exploitation, forced labor or services, slavery or practices similar to slavery, servitude, or the removal of organs." End quote. As at 2020, there were a few countries who decided not to participate in the Palermo Protocol. These are Bhutan, Comoros, Republic of Congo, Iran, North Korea, and the Marshall Islands. The protocol itself does not really have any legal teeth, but what it does help to do is guide UN countries in working together and setting up legislation in their own countries to combat human trafficking. Countries that don't have these measures in place could be considered risky to travel to or hotspots for human trafficking, whether as a source country or a destination. There are three aspects of trafficking that make up the definition of the crime itself that are important to understand. The first is the act involved. This includes recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, receipt, patronizing, or soliciting. So anyone involved in any level of these acts in order to facilitate human trafficking is prosecutable. The second is the means, which include force or other forms of coercion, abduction, fraud, deception, the abuse of power or position of vulnerability, giving or receiving payments or benefits to achieve the consent of the person, and the third component is the purpose, so the exploitation of the prostitution of others or forms of sexual exploitation, forced labor, slavery, servitude, or removal of organs. South Africa's legislation to combat human trafficking is called the Prevention and Combating of Trafficking in Persons Act 7 of 2013. This came into effect on the 9th of August 2015. One of the main additions that the South African law has in relating to trafficking that the other definitions don't explicitly have is that anyone who adopts a child facilitated or secured through legal or illegal means or concludes a forced marriage with another person within or across the borders of the Republic for the purpose of the exploitation of that child or other person in any formal manner is also considered human trafficking. Now, that gap between signing in and actual implementation of the law in South Africa, 2 years, is a little problematic. And there are still gaps in implementation even today. But as with many of our laws, it is considered one of the best pieces of legislation in the world to support the identification, investigation, and prosecution of modern slavery and human trafficking offences. Yes, that's right. We do have many pieces of legislation in our country that are considered world-class, and many countries actually emulate our constitution and pieces of our legislation. Of course, legislation is nothing without implementation and having the resources to implement. And sadly, that is often where we fall down. As with drug trafficking, when dealing with human trafficking, understanding the criminal path and the end point is best tackled by following the trail of money. The lower level guys almost never know what's happening one or two levels up. Everyone goes by pseudonyms, and it's highly unlikely the person making contact with the victims will ever really know who's receiving the victims at the destination. But the money trail doesn't lie, and it can't hide its identity. In December 2019, the South African Anti-Money Laundering Integrated Task Force, or SAMLIT, was established as a collaborative public-private partnership between the regulatory authorities represented by the Financial Intelligence Centre, the Prudential Authority of the South African Reserve Bank, and the domestic and international financial institutions registered in South Africa. One of SAMLIT's objectives is to assist in combating financial crime effectively and efficiently, and enhance a collective understanding of financial crime trends. So, what does that have to do with human trafficking, you may ask? Well, a lot of financial crime is highly organized, right? And so is human trafficking. It's all organized crime. And who better to follow the money in any criminal organization than the financial crime experts? So SAMLIT has several expert working groups, or EWGs, which focus on different target areas. And one of those EWGs focuses on modern slavery and human trafficking. The group has three main objectives. The first is to understand the financial flows related to human trafficking. This includes the source and the destination country, and the demographics of the various role players at all levels. The second objective is to develop a list of indicators which will assist the financial sector to strengthen their ability to identify modern slavery and human trafficking. You may remember something similar from my episode on financial crimes in South Africa, where we discussed the red flags that businesses should look out for to help identify organized crime syndicates. And the group's third goal is to build partnerships with stakeholders who would be able to provide meaningful information on known targets and indicators to the FIC and law enforcement agencies in South Africa. The report, put together by this group, provides indicators to look for when identifying human trafficking syndicates. However, it simultaneously warns that the indicators are really only prominent enough at higher levels of organizations. So, in order to stop victims actively falling into the hands of these predators, it's far more useful to focus on victim indicators rather than attempting to identify who might be trafficking, at least at first. As mentioned, despite the really good legislation we have in South Africa around human trafficking, our implementation does trip us up. And as a result, we remain a tier two on the watch list for countries in which trafficking is likely to take place. So how many human trafficking convictions are we making in South Africa? During the 2020 and 2021 reporting period, the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, or DPCI, or the Hawks, collaborated closely with the National Prosecuting Authority, or NPA, to compile evidence and build cases. During that period, 31 cases of human trafficking were investigated. This was 30% more than the prior period. In 2021, there were 79 ongoing prosecutions by the NPA. 53 of those cases were for sex trafficking, which involved 400 victims. Interestingly, of those 400 victims, 163 were men. I think we often presume that only female victims, or at least female adult victims, are trafficked for the purposes of sex, but this is clearly not true. 5 of the total 79 cases involved forced marriages. Those 5 cases involved 153 South African victims and 105 victims from Malawi. Trafficking for the purposes of forced or unfair labour resulted in 4 prosecutions in 2021, and 17 cases involved other forms of human trafficking, with purposes including organ harvesting and slavery. Although these stats are 3 years old, it's clear that trafficking for the purposes of sexual exploitation is one of the most prevalent forms of human trafficking in South Africa, at least of those cases identified. In analysing the cases where the victims were adults, the report found that the most common purposes for human trafficking was sexual exploitation, and also labour exploitation and organ trafficking. The most common recruitment methods may be surprising to you, or maybe not. Most victims were recruited through fake job advertisements, or their own family and friends. Some of the most common contributing factors for victims falling into the clutches of traffickers were drug addiction and child abuse, although the report doesn't really expand on how child abuse would have contributed to the vulnerability of adult victims. Of the adult victims, all the female victims in the prosecuted cases were South African, and all the male victims were not South African. In the child victims' cases, the most common reasons the victims were trafficked were for sexual exploitation, child marriage, child labour, and domestic servitude. Very interestingly, none of the child victims in these 79 cases were South African. They were aged between 12 and 17 years old, and there was a pretty even split between boys and girls. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that South African children are not possible targets for human trafficking. It very well may just mean that in these identified cases, South Africa was the destination country, and other African countries were the source country, which in itself is terrifying if you consider what these children were being trafficked for, because that means our fellow South Africans are creating a market for the sexual exploitation, forced marriage, child labour, and slavery of children. A sobering thought. The estimated value of the human trafficking industry in South Africa in 2018 was 8 million rand. By 2021, that had increased to 454 million rand. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the actual industry grew by that much. Rather, we need to keep in mind that 2019 was when we actually started following the money. So the 2018 number was likely hugely underestimated. South Africa and Africa as a whole are particularly challenging places to investigate human trafficking, especially when you're using the follow-the-money investigative technique. This is because we still have a pretty significant culture of cash use here. If investigators are attempting to use victim indicators to identify cases, perpetrators may be just as aware of the investigative techniques and may make payments in increments that are low enough not to be flagged. There's also the added difficulty of the hawala system, which is a popular way to transfer funds in some African countries through a network of dealers. Other local challenges include corruption of border officials and other stakeholders. Some of the payment methods used by traffickers among themselves include mobile technology, digitization, casinos, smurfing, which is a money laundering technique involving the structuring of large amounts of cash into multiple small transactions, electronic money, complex trust structures, money mules, online gaming, and gift cards. Perhaps the most challenging aspect of policing human trafficking in South Africa and Africa is the lack of cooperation between the various agencies, NGOs, and businesses who need to share information in order for these syndicates to be identified. One of the most interesting things I picked up in my research is a form of human trafficking that I personally didn't even know existed, and it's one of the most common in our region. It's called sports trafficking. The crime takes many forms, but often involves traffickers infiltrating sports organizations to intercept contracts offered to young athletes from poorer areas. In one version, the traffickers will set up the contract so that it's highly lucrative to the young athlete. But by the time the youngster gets to their destination club, the trafficker is taking a huge portion of that money for themselves, and the athlete is left with very little. In other versions of the crime, young athletes are provided with completely fake contracts, and when they arrive in Europe, they're forced into labor or the sex trade. Sports trafficking in Africa is most common around football, but does happen in many other sports as well. The United Nations estimates that no less than 15,000 children are trafficked from Africa into Europe every year. That is a huge number, and it's incredibly disturbing to me. In order to understand how the flow of money is used to track human trafficking syndicates, I thought I'd include a case study I found in one of the sources I looked at to show this in practice. In one specific case, a law enforcement agency approached a bank with information about an alleged organized crime network which held a bank account with that bank. The network was made up of at least six people who were known traffickers and had been trafficking women out of Eastern Europe for the purposes of sexual exploitation in both the United Kingdom and the rest of Europe. The individuals had been spending huge amounts of money on adult websites, which were also known to be an advertising place for trafficked victims. When the bank reviewed the profiles of the individuals identified in their own records, they found that they had previously closed the account of one individual because they'd picked up financial crime red flags. One of the other individuals had an active account with that bank. The ex-customer had also been flagged internally at the bank because they'd behaved coercively toward bank staff in an attempt to push through transactions without the required paperwork. The bank also noted that a separate female customer was regularly depositing cash into her account through the ATMs outside the branch, even when there were no queues at the counters. CCTV showed that the female customer had been accompanied by the same man on several visits to the branch during the same week. Behavior experts said that the man seemed to be exerting control over the female customer and was checking deposits and statements, seemingly controlling her actions. The active male customer, who was believed to be part of the syndicate, was also reviewed, and it became clear that this account was being used to pay for a variety of low-cost, high-volume transportation and logistics-related bookings across Europe. Direct reviews of transactions also highlighted additional indicators, including a telephone number common to two other bank customers, regular low-level expenditure at local chemists or pharmacies and supermarkets, and no evidence of full-time employment despite significant turnover in the account. The bank filed two further suspicious activity reports that linked six customers and their transactional activity to unusual behavior exhibiting indicators of laundering the proceeds of human trafficking for the purposes of sexual exploitation. This helped the law enforcement agency to grow their intelligence picture for their ongoing investigation and identified previously unknown subjects related to the trafficking ring. Local law enforcement ended up arresting members of the organized crime network, and they were convicted of human trafficking, modern slavery, and prostitution offences. Now, this case study takes place in the UK and Europe. So, here's your task for this special episode, listeners. Without getting yourselves in trouble, if you work in the banking industry, let me know whether this series of events would make sense in a South African context too. Are bank staff trained to watch for behavior like this? Are these things even on our radar? And if you've had any personal or professional experience around any of the aspects discussed in this episode, please reach out too. These specials are intended to be educational, but also interactive, and I do love hearing from you all. You can reach out on social media or by email. My usual killer audio creations email is on the blink at the moment, and until I get that figured out, I'm using wordsmith195@gmail.com. So pop me an email over there. In the next part of this special episode, we'll dive more into the typologies of modern slavery and human trafficking in a South African context. That'll be out in the next few days. If you'd like to hear more victim-focused true crime content, please subscribe to True Crime South Africa on Spotify or the platform you're using to listen right now. If you're looking for something still related to real-life stories, but often with a more positive slant, you can check out my new podcast series, I Live Through This. You can follow both podcasts on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, thank you for your support, and I'll chat to you soon.